Alison has a PhD in design-related disciplines, and for good measure, she's just, what was it, yesterday, the day before, has been awarded a distinction and a C here in medical anthropology.
No, digital anthropology.
Congratulations. The point is, this is so complex, you can't look at it from one discipline. Sometimes more than one discipline are embodied in one person. Alison is going to show us the experiments she's doing with the students, just down the road here, in using low-cost technology to really help patients, help doctors, help nurses to do patient-centered immigration.
Hello, good afternoon. I work in service design, and increasingly we're getting a lot of interest from the NHS for projects to look at patient-centered innovation. One of the things that I should say about service design is that it is very, very human-centered, which again shares some of, it shares many of the discussions that are had in social science. But one of the differences is that we always have to create an intervention in which we are changing the future in some way. I can't always say that we get those right, but actually the fact that we use particular types of methods and practices like prototyping means that actually we're engaging with risk at quite a low level, and that often has appeal for example, a GP practice or a particular clinical environment. So the project I'm actually going to be talking about is one that we are currently undertaking with a GP practice in South London. It has 25,000 patients, it has 13 GPs, and the notable feeling when you go into the practice, it's very overwhelmed, it's stretched to the limit. Also, when you look at the patient feedback online, they are very negative. But actually they are also counterbalanced with people acknowledging the fact that its location means that it's dealing with some very difficult social problems, that also the practice has expanded, and this actually hasn't been addressed necessarily in the way that they deliver their healthcare. The project actually was initiated because two clinical assistance roles were developed for the GP practice. And although one of them, clinical assistant, is medically trained as a nurse, the other one has a non-medical background. But the definition of the role of the clinical assistant was to actually be an intermediary between the doctor and the patient in order to provide support for people with chronic conditions. And the role was very poorly defined, and we were asked to come in to the project and to try and map out actually how they fit within this very busy practice. Almost initially, I mean, we had some reservations because it's very typical actually with a lot of health projects that we're given, where actually the innovation is almost, the approach is very piecemeal. It's the idea that we're adding to a system which has already actually got problems with it. The clinical assistants got very quickly absorbed into, again, the general tensions and challenges of delivering healthcare to the community. Their roles, they are swamped with work, and we were asked to then say, okay, what could we do in order to, again, rethink what the clinical assistant's role might be, and how could this be more effective in terms of the way that patients come into the practice and how they receive care. One of the, from conversations, the student who was working on this project and with guidance from the tutors, he did a lot of observational work. He sat in with receptionists, he spoke to the nurses, he observed, and also he went to the patient group meetings. And there was a core group within the practice who were considered to be the sort of heavy users of the service. And when we actually explored why they were heavy users, and it resonates with what David was saying, is that the idea of having an understanding of the context in which the patient was coming from in terms of their home or their living environment, that was unknown. So the GP practice was really a place where they went for reassurance, But in fact, there was a disconnection between how much background knowledge the practice had in terms of their daily network of people who might be supporting them. So one of the things that we, this was actually quite far down the project, these are being tested at the moment and are, have now been adopted by some of the practice nurses, is a way of trying to better understand the home life of the patients, which actually is fundamental in terms of how they use services. One tends to find in a practice like this, they'll have a mother and baby clinic, and they might also have certain appointment times for young people. But on the whole, people are just treated as one lump of patients who come in. So from a service design point of view, working with the patient group, we looked at creating these visual tools which would allow people to just share very informally their details on, for example, who do I contact in emergencies, who am I happy to discuss my health issues with, do I live by myself, am I living in a shared house, by myself, I'm a single parent, any other people had to specify. And the idea was actually just to see whether this would give a sort of better understanding for some of the clinical teams in understanding why people were going to A&E. And we were quite surprised when we ran the co-design sessions on actually how open people were to use this tool. And the comments we got back from the staff was, if it had been a questionnaire, it would have had a very, very different effect, because people would have felt there was much more interrogation, whereas actually this was really trying to map out the sort of daily networks that people have and use. Again, this was another co-design tool, and these were actually, when I say these were actually co-designed with the medical staff, so we don't have designers just going away and putting these things together. They're actually formulated through discussions and through interactions with the clinical assistants, with the GP, with the patient groups. So again, it was the idea of when somebody's unwell or they have an emergency, who do they contact? Can you just draw lines? What priority do you give to contacting the GP? Do you give it a first, are they the first point? Is it actually the point of last resort? Do you go to the chemist? We also surprised many of the people that we engaged with actually didn't go online. Again, where the practice is based, there are issues, again, to do with language, but also access to the internet. Mobile phones were not necessarily smartphones, but actually, again, we looked at family, friends, where do people discuss their health condition. So people I asked for making the right decision for me, is it a parent, is it your best friend? And again, the nurses tried this out in terms of trying to better understand how their patients are making health decisions. We asked them also to create a pathway, joining phrases to illustrate how they seek reassurance in an emergency. And we were again, when people are unwell, we ask them just to draw lines. So I didn't bother, actually I rushed to A&E, got better soon, but actually just by using simple mapping techniques, and we collected all the sheets, we were able to get some sense of these moments when people resorted to going to A&E, when perhaps coming to the GP practice and speaking to a nurse would have actually reassured them. Filling in, when we were doing the co-design sessions, it was also quite interesting. As you can see actually on the sheet here, this is actually how many times have you used an ambulance in a year, how many times have you seen the GP, how many times have you been to A&E, how many times have you had an overnight stay. And with this particular group, we got responses like, I haven't used the ambulance service very much this year, I've only used it 4 times. So it was really quite revealing on how people felt that they could use the service and what they hadn't used much of. And in fact, again, this notion of perceptions and what's available. And the GP was also surprised at some of the responses they got, bearing in mind they have a certain degree of contact with this high this group of high users, they were surprised in the gaps in their own knowledge in terms of understanding the patient. One of the things, again, we always do when we come up with solutions, and we always blueprint. And I'm showing you this, and it's a little bit disjointed maybe to the co-design tools. This is really what we do at the end of projects, but it's actually how would you implement this? And again, the conversations I think that we're having is how do you scale these, examples up? I mean, this is a very, it's a large GP practice, and we've actually introduced these tools to be used, but what are the opportunities for them to be actually used in other practices? One of the things we do in service design is blueprint. After we have piloted or prototyped a service, we actually visually map out all the different interactions that need to occur in order for a service to be changed and to be delivered in a different way. And again, this actually helps identify where there are weak points in the system or where actually people feel that in terms of resourcing, they won't manage to deliver. So the visual is very, very important. Actually, what we're doing, this is another part of the blueprint, with the we're just prototyping at the moment as a service concept for the GP practice, a reassurance card for those patients who are the high users of A&E to look at roughly every 8 weeks. They will get a call from the GP or from the nurse, and they will be invited in to discuss their chronic health condition, for example, to also have the opportunity to meet the GP clinical assistants. And they're hoping that, but of course, over the long term, this might have some impact in the way that people use A&E. But it's a very experimental prototype. There are issues of scaling up. There are issues too in terms of evaluating. So in terms of service design, it's quite high risk. One of the common views that comes out is that the experience when you hear people talking about using the NHS, and again from a patient point of view, they often say the experience was terrible but the medical outcome was excellent. So actually one of the things from a service design point of view we're always trying to overcome is actually how can you manage expectation. A short-term bad experience is offset by a long-term benefit or value, but actually we often don't appreciate the value while we're going through the process. And one of the problems that we've identified with the different projects that we've done with the NHS is that often government services are very afraid to be transparent and visible. So you don't necessarily see the pathway that you're going through. You don't necessarily see what we call the touch points in which actually your care is being added. And maybe it's only at the end of it that you can really appreciate the medical outcome. In terms of the project from the GP's point of view, for them, they've actually found they've actually termed the tools that we're using. If I go back, they've actually called these now the consultation tools. These are being used in the practice, and in fact, what they're aiming to do over the next 6 months is they've reviewed 50 patients with complex health and care needs who are living with at least one long-term condition with these co-design tools. They're trying to build a much better understanding of how the people are using the services, and actually the idea is to create some design interventions that will actually help the people manage their condition, but also help the GPs deliver something which is more directly tailored to this particular group. So I don't know if that is it's a very visual and very short presentation, but I hope that gives a flavour.
Alison, thank you very much. I think it's fantastic to see how simple design tools can actually be so effective in bringing clinicians and patients together and starting to develop a partnership relation, because we're all in this together. But it's fascinating to see how you can broker them through using design tools. Relatively simple. The issue is still how do you scale it up?
Yes.